Now, it's pretty amazing. The Melanakis government's just passed this extraordinary anti-protest bill in South Australia, and it's more draconian than in any of the other states. Can you give my listeners some reflections from the SA Union's point of view on this?
Yeah, I absolutely can. It's been a very extraordinary and disappointing couple of weeks in South Australia for unions, as well as, other civil society and human rights groups that have been quite outraged by the passage of these laws. The concerns that unions have had from the moment the government put these laws into parliament was, yes, the massive increase in the penalties, but also the increase in the scope of the offence. Not to mention the fact that it was all decided within the walls of Parliament, without any consultation with any community stakeholders or any legal experts outside of the government.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It was so fast. They came up with their bill overnight, and then, like, within 22 minutes or something, it was passed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 22 minutes is all it took, apparently. If you go back 3 weeks in time, right, we had a big oil and gas explorers conference here in Adelaide, and there was a string of environmental protests, as you'd probably expect, alongside that conference being held, calling for urgent climate action. The catalyst, I suppose, for these laws was on the morning of the 24th of May. There was a protester with Extinction Rebellion who suspended themselves from a road bridge in the middle of the city and during morning peak hour, and that created some traffic chaos. Police shut down intersections and the fireys were called in to help retrieve the protester. Now, it was the opposition, the Liberal opposition, that actually came up with the idea for these laws. There were, talkback radio callers who were a bit upset about the traffic inconvenience. The opposition jumped on that and drafted some legislation. It was in the government that leapt in and took the opposition's legislation and introduced it themselves. And it flew through the House, the lower house, with bipartisan support in 22 minutes.
It's pretty extraordinary. And as you point out, that particular conference, which was paid for by overseas fossil fuel companies, it might be added, it was would be expected that there would be demonstrations around what many people would see as being foolhardy environmental vandalism, really.
Well, indeed. I mean, we've seen protests from environmental activists, but also, broad cross-section of society, including unionists, calling for action on climate change and for a just transition for workers. So, it would be expected that a conference like this would attract that sort of attention. The thing with the traffic disruption that happened on that particular morning was, yes, it was initially caused because there was a protester who suspended themselves from a bridge, but it was also the actions of the emergency services that created a lot of the disruption as well. There's been some chatter here in South Australia about whether the police needed to shut down practically the entire CBD to deal with that one protester. There's a bit to this, but the thing that has really shocked people, I think, is the speed with which the government moved on this. And I think it's really critical that we don't accept that this is how laws can be made that control what people can do, the public can do in public places, especially when people now face, the harshest financial penalties, but also potentially jail time.
Also, on your Facebook, you say quite clearly that South Australian union members have fought for over a century to improve our living standards and rights at work. It took just 20 minutes for the government to pass a bill in the House of Assembly attacking our rights to take the industrial action that made that possible. This is very key, isn't it, to union and worker rights?
Yeah, so the government have been saying all along that they took the action that they did because they wanted to target what they called an increasing incident of protests which caused unreasonable disruption and put public safety at risk. But you know, the actions they took and the laws that they put through were not targeted at all. They were broad. They expanded the offence of causing an obstruction in a public place. And that expansion ended up touching a whole range of activities and organisations, including unions and the way that we go about organising public demonstrations and industrial action. And that's why you saw such a mobilisation of unions and civil rights groups and human rights organisations and even the legal profession here in Adelaide.
Yeah. It's interesting that the government also faced down crossbenchers, moved to hold inquiries into the bill to review it in a year or add a defence of reasonableness.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, so, another part of the real disappointment that so many people are feeling comes from the fact that even after so much expert opinion and community sentiment around these laws came out calling for them to be, you know, slowed down, properly considered, properly consulted, the government took the very next opportunity that they had to put them through the Legislative Council. And even though Crossbench suggested quite a number of what I would call, you know, quite reasonable amendments to deal with the scope of the offence and you know, provide more of an opportunity for the potential unintended consequences to be, you know, properly thought through, the government only agreed to, I think it was two or maybe three of them all up.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit more about how the obstruction of public places amendment bill has altered? You know, you talked about it being quite broad.
Yeah, I can. So previously there was a $750 fine that could be handed out if you willfully obstructed a public place. The new laws that the government introduced brought in penalties of up to $50,000 in fines or 3 months jail time. And the test was changed so that instead of if you had done obstructed a public place willfully, the test was whether you had intentionally or recklessly obstructed the public place. So the increase of, the introduction of recklessly concerned a lot of people because, you know, essentially you could be found guilty if it wasn't even your intention to cause the obstruction. Now, on top of all of that, you can now potentially be liable for the costs of the response of emergency services to a protest that you're organising as well. The bill also expanded the offence from dealing with obstructions that are caused directly or direct obstructions and introduced indirect obstructions. So that basically says that people can be held liable for the actions of third parties that create an obstruction at an event or a protest that you organise, whether or not you even knew an obstruction had been created by that third party. If you're the organiser, you could potentially be held to account.
No, this is just a open-ended outrage, really. It also gives the South Australian Police a lot of discretion, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And over here in South Australia over the last couple of days, there's been a lot more media attention on that. Our police commissioner has, you know, come out and said that it's definitely their intention to start applying those new powers that they have when they need to. And on radio yesterday, our police commissioner indicated that, you know, the sorts of costs people could be up for could go into the tens of thousands of dollars. Now, I can give you an example of just how problematic this new section of the Act is. We held a protest, unions and civil society groups, last week. About 2,000 people rocked up to Festival Plaza, which I guess is a bit like Fed Square in Victoria. It's right outside of Parliament, and we were protesting on the morning that this bill went back to the upper house. So it was, you know, a group of about 2,000 people everyone was interacting pretty respectfully. People were in decent spirits. We were well away from any public thoroughfares or roads, and we had some speeches and some music and some dancing. The thing we didn't have any control over, though, obviously, is how the police responded to that. So we had no control over who or what numbers get sent to monitor the crowd. Everyone was acting pretty respectfully with the police, but the police did rock up with about four police horses, and there were about 30 officers who were there. Usually, we'd expect maybe three or four police to rock up to a demonstration of that size. But if we're now potentially looking at situations where two dozen or more officers arrive at a demonstration, and if for whatever reason a obstruction is caused by someone, even if that obstruction is indirect, we could potentially be looking at having to pay the cost for the deployment of all of those officers and any other emergency services that get deployed just in preparation or expectation that there might be something that goes wrong. So that's a real problem. And like, of course, we expect that is to provide a dampening down or a chilling effect on people taking protest action altogether, right? If there is so much risk for people who attend or organise protests, it naturally slows that people will start to rethink it. And for unions who organise demonstrations and protests and industrial action, of course, we would have to start reassessing the risk of us potentially falling afoul of these new offences through no fault of our own.
The Premier, Malanakis, is an interesting subject in relation to this. He comes from the union movement in the sense that he was the secretary of the state branch of the SDA. Now, of course, the SDA is a right-wing union, and that's its tag. Is there any feelings within the union movements about this? That, I mean, this is a Labor government, and this man has come from the union movement.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I can say that the United South Australian Union Movement has expressed concerns to the government about this in no uncertain terms. And like the Premier, as well as the Attorney General, who's the other main spokesperson on these laws, both have union or union adjacent backgrounds, and they've been saying all along that it's not their intention to have created a situation that would expand the scope of this offence or particularly impinge on the rights of unions to take industrial action. But all of the expert legal opinion, the position of the South Australian Law Society, the South Australian Bar Association, and criminal law advice that unions have received indicates that the bill that they put in would have that effect. So the real disappointing thing is that the government's rhetoric around what they wanted to do with this bill and what they didn't want to do with this bill didn't match the law that's been created.
Malanakis went on to the radio talking about extremists and who protested with impunity by crowdsourcing funds to pay their fines. I mean, he's doing the work of the Liberal Party and the foreign corporations, it would appear.
Look, I take the government at their word about what they were intending to do with this bill, right? The disappointing thing is that I think the expansion in the scope of the offence and all the other issues that I've outlined is what happens when laws are rushed through like this, right? You don't have an opportunity to properly craft laws to do the thing that you want them to do in 22 minutes on the floor of Parliament, on the floor of the lower house. So the consistent call that unions and all the other allied groups opposed to this legislation were put into the government was to slow it down, was to actually engage in thoughtful consultation on the bill, and make sure that their, you know, the rhetoric matched the substance. And it's really, really disappointing to have seen these laws fly through the upper house and now become law without the government having actually done that.
It was interesting that the government, and they're not the only government that's done this, but they generally send out a message to the public saying that we need to do this because these obstructions interfere with emergency services. It was significant that the South Australian Ambulance Employees Union actually put forward that they were actually alarmed by the breadth of these laws, considering that in the lead up to last year's state election, Labor joined Greens, South Australia Best and others in protesting about ambulance ramping, which is a case in point, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's really critical. One of the things that the government have been saying is being a big driver behind why they needed to act was keeping the community safe. And one of the things they said was created with this protest at the end of May was a situation where, you know, our largest hospital was gridlocked because it was, you know, right adjacent to where this protest took place. And they, you know, the suggestion was that ambulances and health professionals and health workers weren't able to get to the hospital. Now, the Ambulance Employees Association came out pretty directly saying that there was not at that point in time, nor has there ever been a time where a protest by Extinction Rebellion has caused an ambulance to not be able to assist the community and respond to an emergency situation. So that was quite significant. But I think this is the situation that the government has right now, right? They have created a situation where their supporter base is really disillusioned with them over the way that they've managed the situation, why they responded the way they did, and the process that that they took.
Well, they've trashed democratic rights quite clearly, but it was quite interesting that it was reported that the energy minister was quoted at the conference as saying, "We are thankful you are here," that is the fossil fuel industry. "We are happy to be a recipient of APPEA's largesse in the form of coming here more often. South Australian government is at your disposal. We are here to help and we are here to offer you a pathway to the future." So the economics of fossil fuel development in South Australia as being the linchpin of the economy seems to be their focus.
I think it's not a good look, right, to have had those comments made just days before these laws were put in. So, you know, it's probably worth noting that that conference did have a theme of accelerating towards decarbonisation, right? So some of the government's language and rhetoric leading up to and leading up to the conference
Yeah, but it was finance. I mean, they might have talked about decarbonisation, but it was actually financed by Exxon Mobil,
oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
Woodside.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, words are cheap.
Yeah, absolutely. But look, there is to have these laws come hot off the back of those comments, I think presents a really big problem for the government.
Can you give me any idea about what the pushback is now from SA unions and civil society in South Australia over now that the laws have passed?
Well, we, well, SA unions and the broader, you know, alliance of civil society organisations said our main concern was the expansion of the offence caused by these new laws, right? So we have had the laws that went through the upper house. We've had them now for about a week. So we are still grappling with trying to understand the scope that we're now operating under. So the government's change to include the term reckless in the offence was removed, which is positive, and we're thankful that the government agreed to the crossbenchers amendment on that front. However, the inclusion of indirect obstruction is a really problematic area, and we've got to properly assess what that means for us when we take industrial action and other protests and demonstrations. I do know that some in the human rights space have indicated a potential challenge on the grounds of a high court challenge on human rights basis, but I think we're still, you know, having 7 days under our belt, still just grappling with trying to work out how we need to mitigate these new risks.
Thank you very much for talking to me today, Dale.
That's all right. I'm very happy to. Thank you.